In a profession where it is renowned that nobody ever has any work, Claire Higgins is something of a phenomenon. Just thinking off the top of my head, over the last year or so, she's appeared at the National in Major Barbara, in a double bill also with Simon Russell Beale, of Pinter Plays, A Slight Ache in Landscape, I think it was. She's done Oedipus. She is currently in All's Well That Ends Well. And just for a bit of light relief, she did a solo show downstairs at the Royal Court, The Fever, Wallace Shawn's play. I fear, if there's anything you've done that isn't on stage, I'm completely unaware of it. And you may have done some other things, in which case I apologise. But Claire Higgins, welcome to Theatre Voice.
Thank you very much indeed. It does sound like an awful lot when I'm sitting here listening to it.
As I say, the typical actress over that period would probably have had a week doing a day doing a TV advert, and a week doing some kind of rep where they weren't getting paid. So you are obviously doing something very, very right. Your current role is playing, I'm not sure I get the pronunciation right, the Countess of Roussillon.
Yes.
In All's Well That Ends Well. That is a part that is typically given to a theatrical grandame, which is obviously a compliment to you. And the last person who played it was Dame Judi Dench, and I suspect if we trek back, we would find all the big names have done it. How did you get the part, and how are you finding it?
Well, I mean, to try and encapsulate in a single answer, I think I've been very lucky, because I've never been famous or flavour of the month or associated with a television series or anything like that. So I've been very lucky in that I've just worked. And, you know, occasionally my nose goes above the parapet and people go, oh, it's her, look, she was in so-and-so, and I think, yeah, fine, duck down again. And I think that's probably a very fortunate position to be in, because, as I say, you never get pinned to one particular thing. So I describe myself as quite a free-range actress, so I'm able to do a lot of things without getting typecast and pinned down. And I'm also very lucky to have worked here at the National Theatre on and off since 1987. And so I think the reason why I'm in All's Well is probably to do with that body of work as well as anything else. The National tends to be quite loyal in that sense. It will ask people to come back again and again, which is particularly helpful for young actors, of course, but for those of us who are also approaching our sell-by date, it's lovely, because you have a language here. You don't have to get to know anyone. It's really the nearest thing that I can think of to a rep company. It's a lovely sense of security here, and familiarity and ease. And so really, I feel very close to this place. It's almost like a second home to me, in a sense. And I'm aware that that's a very, very privileged position.
How are you finding this production? It's All's Well That Ends Well is probably about as unknown as Shakespeare can get, I would think. And yet, Nicholas Heitner's done something that's great with it. It's great fun, it's very enjoyable. How have you found it on the stage?
Well, I agree with you. It's huge fun to be in. And I think the clue is in the title, really. I think All's Well That Ends Well is an ironic title. Shakespeare didn't really mean this to have a happy ending, or indeed to have a sort of normal, neat progress through the story. It's meant to have rough edges and odd people and not to tie up neatly. And in that sense, I think it's a very bold play. I particularly love the end of our production, where it's made very clear that this is not a happy ending. As in most of life, it's an ambiguous ending full of possibilities, good or bad. And I think that's one thing that our audiences seem to have picked up on hugely. They really appreciate the fact that nothing's neat, and that things may very well go horribly awry once again. I love this show because I think, again, a very clever thing, particularly from the designer, is that it looks like a fairy tale. And it does have large elements of fairy tale in the story. So I think the brave thing that's happened is it's been treated as a fairy tale. And I think that's largely why the audiences find it satisfactory too.
And how have they responded? I was there on opening night, where it got a very, very positive response. What's happened since then?
They seem to just love it. They're incredibly attentive. They love the comedy. There's a lot of wonderful comedy that's really unknown. And because the play isn't familiar to most audiences, they're receiving it with a freshness. So it's a very genuine response. And particularly the last scene, where things tie up or not, as the case may be, that you can sense a really deep pleasure from the audience because they've been witness to this for the first time. Hardly anyone has ever seen this play. And they go mad at the end. They absolutely love it. It's an incredibly merry show. And they're very generous in their response. Yeah.
And your part, the Countess, is that fun?
Oh, it's wonderful. It has one of the best scenes. This is my second favourite Shakespeare play. My first is The Winter's Tale. So
mine too. That's interesting. Really?
Yes, well, I can't wait to see Simon down the road.
It's fantastic.
Oh, I cannot wait. It's a treat, I promise myself. But it has one of the best scenes I think ever written between two women, which is the Countess and Helena. Mm. And it's fantastically modern in its language and in its intent and in its subtext. And again, the audience respond so willingly and completely to these scenes that they don't know. And you can sense them just opening up with you as they go through these wonderful scenes with you. That's one of my favourite scenes to play every night. And I know, as you said, that most people who've played this have been dames.
you'll get there.
I very much doubt that. But again, that's I just feel hugely privileged to be playing a part like this. Where, again, I think normally it would have been played by someone even older than I am. But it's not. George, who plays my son in it, is very young. I'm younger than it's normally played. And I think that's also part of the audience's enjoyment. It has a young feel about it. It hasn't got an old, let's dust off this play. And to me, the Countess is a mixture of a sort of a wonderful, dignified lady, recently widowed, and a bit of a white witch. And somebody with enormous heart and soul. It's just such a joy to be able to do a part like this. It's hardly ever done.
It's nice to hear people saying things like that. Let's go back to the start of your career, or even pre-career. You've ended up as an actress, you've ended up as one of, I would certainly say, the preeminent actresses of your generation, which you wouldn't disagree with or shouldn't disagree with. What's it taken to get there?
Well, about a week ago, a young drama student who I was coaching to get into drama school said to me, "What do I do? What do I do to become an actress?" And I said, don't ever take no for an answer. The thing about this business is, if it wants you, it will take you, and if it doesn't, it won't. It's very harsh in that way, but if it wants you and you are determined, then there's no reason why you shouldn't have a long and happy career in this business. I think I was very single-minded, like most actors are. I wasn't particularly bothered by the idea of rejection. I knew that came with the territory. And my ambition when I set out was to act once with the Royal Shakespeare Company. So when you consider that, I had that ambition 25 years ago. I've more than surpassed every ambition. I think one very good thing about this business, one piece of advice I'd always say to really young people is never get cynical. Never expect anything. It's a gift to be in this profession, because 95% of people out there want to be doing what we're doing, and I try to never forget that that's the case. Never to get blasé, never to get comfortable or try and rest on a few laurels. I've seen it happen with actors, and it's not attractive. But to always appreciate where you are, always.
It's nice and easy to do that when you're playing on a big stage before 1,000 people a night at the National, I would imagine, but anywhere in the business is good, actually, to have the work. I have to be careful here. I associate you with the stage very firmly, but that may be because I'm much better on the stage than on film or TV. But looking at your biography, you've done ridiculous amounts of TV and film over the years. What's your view of the different media?
Well, I prefer stage, always, way above anything. I think the position now for quite a lot of us is that early on in our careers, or probably until 15 years ago, a lot of us who were, for instance, at the RSC or the National playing big parts would also then have gone off and done series or serials on television, but they're not made anymore. And when they are, you really have to be an absolute superstar to be in one. You really have to have a huge television profile. I think that makes the television poorer, in a sense. But again, I can't resent it or regret it, because stage is my favourite thing, and touch wood, here I am.
It's interesting, actually, that you and Simon Russell Beale, who are amongst the greatest stage exponents around at the moment, have both done an unbalanced amount of stage work when compared with other things. I mean, he's being George Smiley on the radio at the moment. He was Widmer Poole in Dance the Music of Time, which is unforgettable. But he, to me, he ought to have been, you know, one of the very greatest film and TV stars, and he just hasn't done it, which is fantastic, because it means we get to see him on stage. He's just doing the Bridge Project.
Yes, I mean, I think, again, Simon, to me, is a great example. Simon, and I've worked with him, and I know his quality, of course, is probably the greatest actor of his generation.
Yeah,
it's
definitely
a phrase much overused, but I think it's his truth.
There's got to be one person who isn't, he's it.
He's it. I don't see any other claimants to the crown. Yeah. And I think it is astonishing that he is not chased by film producers, by television producers. And I hate to have to say this, but they are really missing out.
Let's keep it quiet, because we don't want them to find out.
Well, you know, I think it does show, really, I don't know whose agenda we're following in casting now, but whoever it is, let me tell you something, Simon's case, you got it so wrong. You know, I think millions should be able to see his performances, and why on earth he isn't a huge movie star and television star, I can't answer that question apart from real short-sightedness and stupidity.
I would say the same about Claire Higgins, actually.
Well, I have to say, it's probably not terribly good at accepting compliments, probably for two reasons. I'm slightly shy about them, and also I think if I go, thank you very much, God or somebody will say, right, that's enough, you're not allowed to do it anymore, you're getting above your station. I find it much easier to stick up for other actors and say how wonderful they are. I've never thought I'd have a career. I work job by job.
One thing that does strike me about the job by job is the variety of jobs that you've done is incredible. You've won 3 Oliviers, got a Tony nomination, etc. And the Oliviers, I think first one was Tennessee Williams, Sweet Bird of Youth, probably. Vincent in Brixton, which is... I remember some of these things and researched others. Vincent in Brixton, which is sort of a modern play. Well, it's
modern writing play,
but about the past. Mm. And then Hecuba, I think, at the Donmar, which is... Greek tragedy.
3,000 years old or something.
Exactly. And the one thing so far that you haven't won an Olivier for is Shakespeare, but maybe that will come. But it's just that is a very, very short demonstration of some of the variety of your work. And you can probably expand on much. It's much wider than that as well. You've done royal court stuff, you've done Shakespeare, you've done Greek tragedy, Oedipus this year as well. This suggests either that you can't get... picked out as being typical of one type of genre, or that you're most fantastic actress, or I don't know what.
Again, I feel very lucky, you see, because I'm allowed to have a wide range. Quite a lot of other actors aren't allowed, because they have a much higher profile than I do. People are quite astonished. Oh, you're in George Bernard Shaw, now you're doing Shakespeare. And then you're doing a one-woman modern show. But of course, every actor should be allowed to do this kind of work and not be confined to one or the other. So when you say this to me there and I hear it, I think, thank God I'm allowed to do that. I'm not confined to being modern or being classical, which is probably a very artificial boundary anyway. Excuse me, I have hay fever. And of course, the older you get and the more practice you have, you do get technically better at all of those very different demands, which are basically technical demands, really, when you can boil down to it.
Do you have a preference? Do you want to state what the preference is if you do?
I most often say I don't have a preference, because I do. Every single play I've ever done has really a completely special place inside me. I don't know why, for some reason, I was thinking about Hecuba the other day. Well, I do know why, because I was trying to teach Greek drama. And I really felt stretched and opened up so much during that. It was my first Greek ever. And that was an extraordinary experience. I remember saying to Jonathan Kent, who directed it, I was finding it very difficult, and I came into rehearsal one day and I said, I think I've solved it. I think I just need to bring it all right down, really, and make it much more intimate. Jonathan nearly hit the roof. He said, don't be so stupid. It's Greek. You've got to do more, more. I said, more? He said, yes. I said, oh, my God. And he was absolutely right. So the other thing is I've been incredibly fortunate to work with directors who know when I'm wrong. Because a lesser director might have said, oh, well, go ahead then. Jonathan said, no, get on with it. Do as you're told. Get on with it.
What about stages? Because that was at the Donmar, which is pretty much as intimate as it gets, certainly in the West End. You're now playing on a massive, wide-open space that has a reputation for being unplayable anyway. How does that affect you? And Oedipus was on there, so you did Greek tragedy in the Olivier. You played in the Donmar.
I know this may sound a bit odd to say, but the Donmar and the Olivier are both my favourite stages in the world.
That does sound odd.
And I've heard it said, and I think it quite unfairly, that the Olivier has a very bad reputation for actors. All I can say is I don't find it so. There's something particularly joyous about, particularly if I'm thinking about Jocasta now in Oedipus, to try and use the same amount of emotion as I did in Hecuba, which was on a tiny stage. My delight in finding that it makes no difference where you are was huge. To me, it doesn't make any difference. The size of the stage simply makes no difference, apart from technically. And even then, being on a small stage has its own technical advantages and disadvantages. The Olivier is a big stage for big performances and big actors. I have to say, I feel very much at home on there. I love it because you can just do it to more people. On the other hand, being at the Donmar is incredibly exciting for us and for them because you are in their laps, you know. I wish I could be two people and do it both theatres on the same night. But I'm being greedy now.
Probably just a little. One of your greatest successes was Vincent in Brixton, where it was fascinating. It was a modern play by Nicholas Wright, I think. It was done with you playing with certainly a fairly unknown Dutch actor.
And you
must have played in an awful lot of different places. You played it National, on Broadway, West End, touring possibly.
It was the play that wouldn't die. And I was amazed at how successful it was at first. And then I realised something very basic, which was that, like several other plays I've been fortunate enough to do, for some reason that play had the gift of touching people. And it still has an enormous place in people's hearts. I still get letters about it. If I meet people in the street who've seen it, they stop me. It hit people right in the heart. And I was just amazed at how everybody loved this. We did the Cottesloe at the National, then we did the West End. Then we went to Broadway, which was unbelievable.
Then we where did you play on Broadway? Was it one of the absolutely massive houses?
In the John Golden Theatre. And what worried me about Broadway is I said, they'll never understand this title, Vincent in Brixton. So I used to tell people it was, think of it as Vinny in the Bronx. And they kind of went, uh-huh. But they got it in the end, even though they thought it was about Vincent van Gogh. And we thought it was about Vincent van Gogh. But they were enormously touched by it. Then we came back to the West End, and then my agent rang me up and said, well, they want you to do a 3-month tour. And I said, look, I love this play more than life itself, but I can't do a 3-month tour. And she said, that's all right. And then she named a very famous actress and said, well, she wants to do the tour. And I said, I'll do the tour! So I felt obviously terribly possessive about it. And that holds an incredibly special place in my heart because the amount of people it touched. I'm just about to do another play by Nicholas Wright called Mrs. Klein at the Almeida, which was first done here 20 years ago. So, see, I'm thinking now how lucky, I only heard this just very recently, I think how lucky I am. I'm doing a second play by Nicholas Wright. And for me, again, he's one of the most wonderful modern writers. So, you know, again, I don't want to sound like Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, but I couldn't be a lot luckier.
Do you have any parts you hanker after playing? Film, stage, TV, or anything?
Oh, always stage. I've never played Lady M.
I wondered about that because I think you'd be is it nice to say I think you'd be extremely good at it?
It's an awful thing to say. Because apparently I'm very scary. I've been in a horror film. Very frightening. In fact, I'm so frightening I can't watch myself. But I've never played Lady M. And now, of course, we'd have to find a director who's willing to do a Lady M with an older Lady M. But I don't see a problem in that. I do long to play it. Even though, as actresses who've played it, point out they go, it's only four scenes, darling. And I say, yes, but look at them. Look at those four scenes. Come on. I mean, plays are not about how long you're on for. That much I know. You know, I'm thinking of Oedipus now, Jocasta's on for one scene. It doesn't matter. It's not about how long you're on for. It's about the text. And I'm just constant in a state of absolute being really gobsmacked at how fortunate I am. You know, it is true that every time you do a play, you think that's it. You really do. Nobody will ever ask me again. I mean, Judi Dench once told me this, that she still feels that. So that's just neurosis. We can't help it. But I'm still touching wood as I speak. Oh, long may it continue.
At least the empirical evidence suggests that you aren't always sitting around doing nothing, if ever. You've talked about one play ahead. Is one play ahead as far as we ever look?
It is. I don't think I'm really allowed to say any more than that. I think I will be, looks like I'll be coming back to the National soon after that.
How exciting. You're not allowed to tell me what?
No, I'm not, unfortunately, until it's printed, you see. Because they might change their ideas and all that. But, no, I'm going to be back really soon. And again, you know, in a profession where, I don't know, I think the figure's something like 80% out of work at any one given time. And it's the middle of a recession or a depression, to be honest. To be booked ahead, which is very rare for an actor, is kind of a wonderful feeling, particularly at this point in the economic downturn. Because our bookings are flourishing.
It's delightful to hear that. Claire Higgins, thank you so much.